Golf Smarter Premium number 494, published on June 23, 2015. Golf Board, changing the way golfers experience the game by surfing the earth with President Jeff Dowell.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Jeff.
Thank you, Fred. Good to see you.
We are so excited to have you on because about a year plus ago, we got a chance to get an introduction to Golf Board when it was just a prototype. Golf Board, surf the earth. Why don't you explain first what Golf Board is for those who've had their head in a golf hole? How can you have not seen Golf Board? It's coming on so strong. It's so exciting.
Oh, thank you. It has been quite amazing the last year or so in particular. But really, Golf Board came from a genesis of an idea where a avid surfer, Don Wildman, about 5 years ago, decided he wanted to have a way to take his morning surf experience and take it to the golf course with him. And he started to build kind of electric longboard or purchase electric longboard prototypes and make them so that they could be used on a golf course. Softer tires, spring, suspension, carry a golf bag, the whole bit. And started to build a series of prototypes. He got Laird Hamilton involved. Laird's a good buddy of his who obviously is a world-class surfer and has a history of pretty strong innovation. And Laird pulled in a few more people, and they basically built a pretty amazing series of prototypes over the course of the next 3 or 4 years. And 2014 PGA show, the product was officially launched, won the Product Innovation and Product of the Year at the merchandising show. And,
wow, congratulations.
It's been an explosive ride ever since, and we're learning new stuff every day, if not every week. So really, to answer your question directly, it's kind of a cross between a longboard, skateboard. It certainly has characteristics of a golf cart, except it's for one person. It's a whole lot more fun to ride in or ride on than riding in a golf cart. And it brings elements of physical activity and board sports, et cetera, to golf, which in itself is in need of some injection of fun and speed.
It is definitely one of the products that I think is an answer to a prayer of the USGA. How do we get more people? How do we get young people involved? And this one is a no-brainer on that sense.
Yes, it's got a lot of support, I think, from the game at many levels. It's got support from the players because it's just outright as much fun as you can legally have on a golf course, as we jokingly say. It's also a way to play faster golf without playing hurried golf. And there's a difference between the two. You know, when you go out on a golf cart sometimes and then you're trying to hurry around 9 or 18 holes or whatever, you feel hurried. With a golf board, you can play at a natural pace of play. On most courses, you get to go closer to the greens, closer to the tee boxes, et cetera, because it's got a very light footprint. And you actually cut down on a lot of the walking back and forth time and things like that you do in a golf cart. So it's got a lot of the backing from major organizations as well as course owners all the way down to the players.
I am fielding some questions, and to let the podcast audience know, we are broadcasting this live right now on Periscope. We are at Golf Smarter on Twitter and on Periscope, and people who are already watching this live are submitting questions, which I really appreciate. And to those who have submitted some questions, I'll get to them because they'll fit right in. But I want to talk about the expansion. I want to talk about we got to the initial idea. And did you have any sense, did the company have any sense how broad the appeal would be, or was it specifically targeted at a specific demographic?
You know, I think it would be fair to say I've been here for the last year, and there's probably some history I don't know at the perspective level to that question, but I think it would be accurate to say that the original belief was that there would certainly be resonation and interest from the younger generation, younger golfers, for a number of different reasons. But I think what has really been a big surprise to all of us has been not only do the youth embrace the product, wholeheartedly, but it's pretty much embraced across the age spectrum, which really did kind of surprise us. We thought we would be, you know, 50 and below, just generally speaking, or whatever the right number is. But what we're finding out is it tends to appeal to a level and a type of fitness. And I don't say that because I'm trying to imply that you have to be, you know, a surfer or a good skateboarder or a snowboarder to use the product. Not at all. Only that you have to have some sense of a little bit of physicality and balance and those types of things and be comfortable, you know, getting onto a board and leaning a little bit to turn one way or the other and stuff like that. And we've got people literally who use this product that are 80 plus years old and they use it regularly and daily. And it really comes down not to age, but just to comfort and the ability to move and lean and be confident in physical movement.
I got to ride one of the prototypes early on, and the thing that surprised me, you talk about the fitness element to it, the thing that surprised me more than anything was the core workout that I was getting from it.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't think about the fact that you know, kind of the upper legs, front and back, as well as the core. As you're turning the board, you really, once you learn to ride the golf board, you tend to use more of your body weight and more of your core to lean and to get your direction from that, as opposed to, you know, pushing and pulling on the stability bar to try to get the board to go one way or the other. It's far more effortless to be able to simply lean in one direction or the other and use your body weight, and the core and the lower body play a big part in that.
Now, you know, I may have ridden a skateboard when I was a kid, but I haven't in years. I still have friends who are in their 50s, 60s and above that go skiing on a regular basis. And I would see this being huge appeal for off-season skiers.
Yeah, it is. And in the same way that it was huge appeal for sort of off-afternoon surfers, if you will, the origination, they were looking for a way to extend that experience. And certainly if you've got snowboarders, they're going to be very, very natural and very avid golf boarders. It's a much more stable device. It's a device that's been designed and been through a number of design iterations that really allow you to take it from a sport board with no stability bar and foot straps as you would a snowboard. Very few people ride it that way, but the most advanced riders do, and they throw their golf bag on their shoulder. And they can get some pretty serious cuts and turns and have a lot of fun with it. But the everyday use is certainly 95%. The commercial version of the board that has a stability bar, it has a place to hold your golf balls. It's got a thumb throttle switch built into the stability bar itself. So you don't have to have only one hand on the bar like you do with the sport version. And it really is something that anybody, pretty much anybody with any sense of balance at all and any sense of physical confidence can get on, and within 5 minutes they can be going forward. There's two speeds, high and low. Low is roughly 6 miles an hour. High is roughly 10 miles an hour. And those are very manageable speeds for people to be able to get on and understand and feel very quickly how stable the product is and therefore how much fun it can be just to be able to move around and steer it.
You talked about iterations. Can you kind of walk us through step by step what the various iterations were and modifications that you've had to make on this thing to make it more appealing? And safety is, of course, is a huge issue, but to make it so it's easier and more comfortable for the user.
Yeah, and then, boy, that could take the rest of the half hour, so I'll try and keep it at a high level. what I will tell you is the kind of a funny internal story. The original belief of what the board had to be in order to be kind of bulletproof and ready for the marketplace turned out to be a gross underestimation. You know, we built 20 or 30 boards originally and put them out in a beta site. And they got, I don't want to say destroyed, but they got beat up pretty significantly. People did stuff on the boards that we never could have imagined. And we had to go back and redesign a lot more strength into what we call the tray, the basic container on the golf board that has the engine mounts and all the rest of it, as well as the stability bar that you hold on to. We have been through probably a dozen very significant in the last year, a dozen very significant improvements, all centering around strength, resiliency, safety, and ease of riding and comfort of riding. So we feel like we've got, you know, we feel like we've got 5 years of development thrown in the last 12 months because we've gotten so much feedback and been able to observe so much firsthand how people ride them, how they use them, and what they want out of the product.
What are some of the things, you know, you didn't want to get into detail, but some of the things that you were completely shocked about that you didn't anticipate that were, you were saying, get it beat up?
Well, people, particularly in our part of the country, we're in Central Oregon, which is a big ski community, and it's a huge golfing community as well. But we've got Mount Bachelor 25, 30 minutes away. So it's a very, very athletic climate, if you will. And a lot of skiers, a lot of snowboarders, and they would get on golf boards, get it out on a golf course and find the nearest edge of a sand trap or anything else they could find and start jumping the board, for example, and trying to catch air and do mule kicks and all those wonderful things you can do on a snowboard.
Oops.
Yeah. You know, it takes a phenomenal design spec to build something that can do that. And we found some compromises. We found some very heavy duty springs. We found some additional strength motors so that the axles could handle stuff like that. We kept the center of gravity very low so that you could do a lot on it. But one of the things that we don't sanction, if you will, is the jumping of it. It's just very hard on the board. We could build an industrial strength board to do that type of riding, but it would cost three times as much as it does now. The amount of torque and the amount of G-force and stuff like that you can actually do from dropping 3 or 4 feet off the top of the edge of a sand trap or a cornice, as we call them, it's a very significant design challenge. So we had problems there when that first started to happen. We had problems when people would lose their balance with the stability bar. And in some cases, they would actually put so much pressure on the stability bar that they could bend it forward or bend it backwards. So we ended up using almost entirely solid base, enhancing the base of the stability bar where it mounts into the golf board tray itself, and then making the actual bar itself out of almost half-inch reinforced plugs to keep the base of the bar and to keep the bar itself from bending or let alone breaking.
When I rode the prototype, the stability bar was an optional feature. Is it still, or is it now a standard?
You know, it's a standard. We only have the ability on the what we call the sport board model, which is the remote control model. There's two models, the remote control and the thumb throttle. They actually go two different speeds, the remote control board. The sport board will go 7 miles an hour on the slow speed and up to 14 miles an hour on the high speed. And the thumb throttle will go, I believe it's roughly 6.5 miles an hour at slow speed and 10.5 miles an hour at the top speed. The biggest difference between those two is not just the speed, but the type of riding you can do when you have to hold on to the stability bar with one or both hands, when you have to hold on to it and keep your thumb on the controller for your acceleration and your deceleration. It tends to make a much more conservative ride in terms of the different acrobatics and stuff like that you can do, because if you're going fast and you're riding back and forth and you're trying to do cuts and turns and things like that, it's a little bit harder to keep your thumb steady on that accelerator, and it just necessitates a little bit more of a controlled ride and a more conservative ride, which quite honestly is what the majority of our customer base wants. They're not sport riders. They want to go out and have the sensation of being able to control and move the board around, but they don't want to have great balance. They don't want to get themselves in a situation where they can't control the board, et cetera. So we really try to dial it back. And the first board that you saw, you're right, one of the models didn't even have a stability bar on it. And some of our individual board riders will buy the sport board and take the bar out and put in toe clips and the whole bit. But that's literally like 0.1% of who our customers are.
I need to apologize to the podcast audience for this clicking noise every time I'm talking, because it's a mute switch and a cough switch is in the business. A mute switch so that I can allow you to listen to Jeff speak without having any feedback on my microphone. So that's what the clicking is. Is it true, Laird Hamilton, because he's a world-class surfer, he, in the original phase of this, he got this thing going pretty fast, didn't he?
Yeah, well, some of the prototypes were far from what you would expect to see on a golf course. They had minimal, if any, speed inhibitors on them, but by the same token, they really wouldn't work on a golf course. They would have chewed up the turf because they had such acceleration and that type of thing. That they were more kind of sport and developmental builds than they were intended to be used on the golf course for this purpose. It actually was a pretty significant engineering feat to figure out what works on a golf course. A lot of small little things here and there that you have to learn. You know, rate of acceleration when you press the thumb throttle or when you press the accelerator down full. What you don't want is unlike an automobile where when you floor it, you get an immediate amount of intense force to push yourselves forward and you know, it kind of throws you back in the seat. Well, this is exactly the opposite of what you want here. Now, here we have a controlled, computerized controlled, very slow acceleration curve, even when you accelerate fully. So there's a whole bunch of design considerations around the user experience and how important it is to pay very close attention to that user experience, because that's really the key to people having fun. If they can go out there and not have to be terribly good at any of the parts of riding the board and can still have a good time and still have a safe time, they're thrilled. And that's a big deal for us.
Absolutely. Some courses are very flat. That's easy. Mm-hmm. That would be a simple thing to do. Living here in Northern California, and I'm sure living in Bend, Oregon, you don't have a lot of level courses. There's climbs, hills, yep. and a lot of swales, things like that. How does the golf board handle that?
It handles it extremely well. And this isn't a sales pitch at all, but literally this thing can go straight up the side of a hill, minimal impact on speed. It's got phenomenal torque. And perhaps equally or more importantly, the downside of those hills, if you think about most skateboards, for example, when you get to the crest and head down the other side, that's when people usually get hurt. It freewheels, it heads down the other side of that hill at a much greater speed than you were able to come up. The golf board doesn't do that. The golf board has a maximum speed on it of the two ranges I mentioned, roughly 10 and 14 miles an hour, because going down the other side of any steep hill, the motors actually act as a management, a brake management system as well. So when you're going up, you can chew a hill up pretty much as aggressively as you want to ride it. And when you're going down, it controls you and keeps you under control so that you don't get in a situation where you're going faster than you can safely get out of. And that's a big design consideration. That would be the opposite of what some of the very early Laird Hamilton prototypes had, because they wanted to go very fast downhill, of course, for obvious reasons.
What about going through not standing water? Let's just call it standing water.
Yeah, no problem for the average small puddle and stuff like that on a golf course. You don't want to take this thing and submerge it in anything more than a few inches of water, if even that much. If there's It would be probably common sense, like a golf cart. You don't want to drive a golf cart halfway up the wheels, if you will, through a pond or something else. So generally speaking, you want to do whatever you need to keep the inside of the tray, the inside of the golf board itself, dry. And if it gets to a situation where you've got to drive across the bed of a creek or something like that, you shouldn't do it. It's not safe and it's not smart.
Yeah, yeah. The motor, is it electric or is it gas?
It's electric.
It is.
Yeah, it's electric. And actually, there's a power motor on both the front and the back of the system. We have what we call positraction. And it's not just a rear-powered board, which is one of the ways that we get the phenomenal climbing ability. It's also one of the ways that we get two other important features. One is the stability. And the other, most importantly, is the lack of the lack of the characteristic of tearing up the golf course. So if you had a two-wheel rear-powered only skateboard, if you will, on a golf course, and you got into a situation where you needed more torque to get up a hill or turn around a corner or something like that, typically what could happen, and it happens occasionally with a golf cart also, is you get burnout marks, you get tear-up marks in the turf. And that's a real bad thing. And with the four-wheel positraction, you don't get that. There's actually a very intelligent computer motor controller inside the tray that knows exactly how fast the front and back axles are turning. And if one starts to turn more than the other, it automatically equalizes those out. And because of that, it increases stability and safety considerably, and it decreases the opportunity for any kind of turf tear that you want to avoid.
I would think that any turf tear like that, the maintenance, the groundskeepers would say, there's no way this is getting on my golf course. So it's not like, it's not that you're just appealing to the marketing person or the general manager. You also have to make sure, because that guy can put his thumbprint on any golf course and say, there's no way.
Yep. And it's the great thing about the golf board is, even with a rider on it, you know, even with a 275 pound rider, it's still only 400 pounds of combined weight, give or take, which is, you know, a quarter to a fifth of what a golf cart is. And when you look at the impact of additional weight and stuff like that on the turf, the golf board thus far has not met with any resistance from the maintenance chiefs and the maintenance heads for that reason. As long as it's used responsibly, it's like anything else. Sure, you can do bad things on a golf board just like you can on a golf cart, but used with any degree of common sense, it does nothing that harms the course as much as other stuff can.
And what is the learning curve for the average user?
Literally 5 minutes. All the courses are required to do what they call an onboarding process, which is we have a pre-course video. So if you wanted to go and use a golf board today, the golf course typically would have you go to a training video link that they would provide their end users when they signed up on their tee time and said, I want to get a golf board. They would capture an email address and get the ability to send them a link. It shows all the common basic ways to use the golf board, some safety tips, those types of things. And it prepares them for getting to the course and then being taken out and having a little 10-minute, literally hands-on or feet-on, if you will, experience on the golf board in an area where they can drive it back and forth. And if the person at the course and or the individual who chose to rent the golf board has any experience there that they don't think they're ready for or can't have, it's fair game. They just say, no, that's not for me. Hasn't happened that I'm aware of, but it's something you have to keep an eye out for. And to answer your question directly, it's shocking how easy and quickly people adapt and find that they can ride a golf board. And that's across a much broader age spectrum than they ever could have imagined.
Is that one of the big surprises?
Yeah, for sure. That's it. And the other big surprise, just from my perspective, is almost the degree of emotional buy-in, emotional excitement that people get after they ride the golf board. It's a very fun thing to do, and it's something that people talk about with great excitement when they describe to someone what it's like to take a golf board out and play 18 holes. It's something that every time I get lost in the day-to-day business operations of what we do here and the craziness of it sometimes and the hours we work and all that, I just go out and watch people who haven't taken a golf board out before. And it reminds me of how excited and how genuinely what's the right word? Motivated is the wrong word, but just how genuinely
pumped up.
Pumped up is a great word. The riders are when they come off the golf board. It's something that you just almost can't describe. It's exciting. It's fun, and it really touches people at a very deep emotional level.
It's like kind of like GoPro has exploded in the marketplace, and mainly because of word of mouth and, you know, people being able to share with other people and the potential, the possibilities that it offers.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, because that's true. There's a tremendous social media campaign and backing behind the product, a lot of support from a lot of pretty significant people in the industry and in other sports. And yeah, it's the amount of social media coverage and social media excitement that has been around the product, particularly in the last 120 days, has been at times overwhelming. I mean, we had a video the other day that went out that we thought was just regular golf course owner describing what it was like to have golf boards, and one of our sales reps was there, and the thing exploded, and then within 72 hours there were 5.2 million hits on this thing, and it was just, it was phenomenal. Major news organizations picked it up around the country. It was just absolutely phenomenal. It just talked about, from the course owner's perspective, how easily it was adopted by the players at the course, how much more they enjoyed it than some of the other options that they had for playing golf, and how easy it was to ride and how safe it was to ride. It was we couldn't have written a better script, and it all came from the customer unprompted.
Congratulations. That's truly amazing. That's really great. You know, I was as I was telling you, we're broadcasting this live on Periscope, and Josh and Tom Rules is asked more questions than I have. So I want he has a bunch of questions that he's been asking. So I want to get to a couple of his. Let's see, this first one, sorry. Individuals can own these, or is it mainly directed at sell you guys directing it towards golf courses?
Our primary focus thus far has been golf courses. The reason for that is it's a product that needs to be maintained. If it's ridden every day on a golf course, for example, you know, you've got to check to make sure the tire pressures remain the same and remain in a safe range, and that all the various parts of what you would do to do preventative maintenance on a golf cart, you have to do similar things to a golf board. Some people who are early adopters on the individual side, to them, that's no big deal. They love tinkering anyway. So yes, we initially thought we would sell a lot more to individuals. Then what happened is the B2B, the direct to golf course business, just took off like a rocket. And only recently have we begun to kind of turn back and say, okay, you know, there's an individual board, it's a sport board. And of course they can, the individual buyer can also buy the commercial model with the thumb throttle on it. So I would say we're cautiously working with individuals and selling to individuals as well. Those that are in areas where we can provide direct support or get them support on the board if they need it are the first areas that we're going into, but it's certainly going to be a huge long-term focus for us. We think the personalization of the golf board and the ability to use the golf board potentially down the road outside of just a golf course is a big attraction.
What do you mean by personalization?
The ability to customize the color of the fenders, for example, to have, you know, not that we're doing this, but I can see a time where, you know, you could have a, you know, name your local sports team version of a golf board, name your whatever you want to make it in terms of your cause or your interest with decals and colors of a fender and customized decks and boards that you stand on, that type of thing.
Well, Josh and Tom Rule says, interesting. Thank you. He also wants to know how difficult, if you own one on your, you own your own, how difficult is it to transport from your house to the golf course?
It's actually pretty easy. We've talked about one of the things that we learned early on, and I forgot to mention, but that's a great question because it made me think of it, is, and this probably was the way on the original prototypes and stuff you rode. Originally, the only method there was for taking the stability bar out was to remove the deck, and then you could get to the screws which held the stability bar in and secured it to the golf board itself. We have since moved that up above deck, as we call it, and literally with one screw, you can take the stability bar out, lay it down, put it on the deck itself, pick the board up, and either put it in the back of a pickup. If you've got a reasonable size back seat, you can put it in the back of the back seat of a car. It is 125 pounds, so if you're doing that by yourself, you've got to be pretty strong to do so. Typically what happens is someone grabs a front end, someone grabs a back end, you pick it up and you drop it in, you know, the back of a minivan or the back of your car or even the back of a pickup. If it's in the back of the pickup, you haven't got to take the stability bar off. But we did make it easy to do just so it had the flexibility of being transported around. One thing you can't do with them right now, it has a lithium ion battery inside of it to provide all this power and torque and everything else. And you can't put them on an airplane and fly them around with the battery in there. There's, for good reason, all sorts of safety restrictions on flying things on airplanes with large lithium-ion batteries on them. I think we're going to have an answer to being able to do that in the near future, in a future development or a future version of the product. But that's something that generally you got to plan on driving it wherever you're going.
Yeah, I one of my clients, I can't say who it is, They had me shoot a video for them on how to unbox a lithium ion battery because it's like, why are we doing this? And they said, because if it's not boxed properly, not only is there going to be a $250,000 fine for doing it wrong, but the person will lose their job who unboxes it or reboxes it wrong, and it could blow up an airplane. It's like, yeah. Oh, okay. Got it. Got your point.
Yep.
And anybody with a Mini Cooper, I guess, is not going to be owning or taking one to the golf course. But anybody with a Mini Cooper can't even get their golf clubs in the car.
Not unless they have a rack on top that they can adapt from a bike rack to maybe a golf course.
I think what they're going to have to do is put the Mini Cooper on the golf board. Are there adjustments that the golf course has to make for each person as they, you know, like you got a 15-year-old kid, and then you've got a very large person who's going to be using it right after them. Are there serious adjustments that have to be made?
No, we generally try and set it up to where it's pretty tight all the way up to the end of to the top end of the 275-pound spectrum in terms of the tension in the springs and the coiled springs as well, the leaf springs and those types of things. So suspension overall is set pretty tight. It's done so. It's done that way because it tends to make particularly new riders feel much more secure if their feet aren't flapping back and forth like they normally would be on a unspringed skateboard, if you'll pardon the bad English there. But skateboards, as you know from youth, are generally pretty wobbly. And the golf course is designed to be exactly the opposite of that. So, you know, can a 75-pound 13-year-old ride it easily? Probably not. But can anybody with 100 pounds to 120 pounds of weight and a little bit of body mass ride it just as easily as a 275-pound person? Absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. Could you ride one for 36 holes? That's the question is battery length.
Yeah,
which is the big question, which is the, you know, for any product these days, battery is the ultimate question, I guess, especially for
it's the ultimate question and it's the ultimate challenge. So what we've learned a lot in the last year is describing number of holes is only partially useful. Obviously, it's an important reference point. And the reason I say that is it's the quick answer to your question is yes, we should be able to get 18 holes at a minimum. Out of a golf board with any size person on it under all but the most unusual of circumstances. And what I mean by the most unusual of circumstances is we learned, for example, on public golf courses down south, which this winter we're getting the majority of use on golf boards. We learned, unlike our testing environment up here at Tethero Golf Club just down the road, you can play 6-hour rounds of golf on a public golf course in Florida or Georgia or Texas or whatever else. And what we didn't think about was when people are on golf boards and they have to wait for their next shot, unlike a golf cart where you just sit and you have a water or a beer or talk with the person you're with or whatever, people on golf boards ride. They go back and forth and up and down and, you know, everywhere around. And all of a sudden, you know, the typical golf course at 5.5 or 6 miles for the average 18 holes that you might walk, you know, you can have gone 7 or 8 or 9 miles in 13 holes. And as you go further and further, there is a point at which it starts to slow down and tries to give you a warning and say, hey, we can't, you know, you can't keep going at this speed. So my answer to can it go 18 holes? You can absolutely go 18 holes on almost any golf course you can imagine under most normal usable circumstances. Can you ride it so hard and so far that it will exhaust itself before 18 holes? If you're not really playing golf and you're just out to do that, yes, you can.
Hey, you kids over there, stop having so much fun. Are you comfortable talking about price points for the average public?
Yeah, the average public can buy a golf board today for $6,500. And they're rentable on golf courses, generally for somewhere between $20, I'd say, and low 30s, depending on the course. It's much easier to do that. They have, we're getting more and more courses. We have probably almost 500 golf boards out there now in the U.S., and that's at about 75 golf courses. So it's just really started to take off the last two or three months when the season is picking up so much in the north.
Right, right. Congratulations. Well, one of the questions, Josh and Tom Rule is having so much fun submitting questions. Let me have the interview, man. Calm down. He's throwing up love and hearts and things like that. when I first saw it, the price point was much higher than that. So I'm really happy to see it's coming down. Do you see as business progresses that you will be able to continue to bring the price down? Do you see that happening?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, we have the classic Model T approach right now. As Henry Ford, I think, said, you can have any color you want as long as it's black. In our case, you can have any golf ball you want as long as it's the one that we produce. So we have not yet gotten to the point of both needing to or being able to cost effectively have a whole bunch of different models with different options and price points and that types of things. But the market hasn't demanded it yet. And most importantly, I think as we start getting higher and higher volume and a more diversified marketplace, we will find the need to be able to say, okay, here's product A, it fits in this category, product B, product C, et cetera. And I do see us being able to drive that price point down primarily based on volumes and a different feature set.
Well, I had it written down to ask you how's business, but you've kind of explained that business has been great. Do you see it primarily going out to resort type of courses, or is it munis or country clubs or everybody? Who are you really directing your efforts to right now?
Thus far, I think we have seen a pretty equal adoption from pretty much all the different types of courses. I do believe that as we get more and more data about the demographics of the various clubs and the types of players, et cetera, I think we'll start to see some patterns. So I would only say that so far it's been pretty much across the board. But having said that, that's with the realization that we're still dealing with a pretty small universe of users in the overall scheme of things.
Well, I am so happy for you guys. This is just awesome because it is a great idea. And it's a fun product. And I just couldn't be happier for you and how it's going. And for the Golf Smarter listeners, if you remember or if you haven't heard, you're a premium subscriber, you can go back to November of 2013 where we talked to Paul Hodge. And then the following week in December, episode number 413, Mike Radenbaugh, who are still both involved with the company, right?
Yes. Yep. Mike is still working feverishly on product design and product development. And Paul still sits on our board of directors and provides all sorts of extremely valuable insight, as well as running the leasing company for Golf Board that allows us to offer both a business-to-business and a consumer leasing option for people who don't want to buy them but want to lease instead.
Awesome. Just fabulous. Well, listen, I have to make a couple of announcements. And when we come back, maybe you can give us a piece of advice or a tip about Golf Board. And we'll shoot that on video so we can use it to promote this episode of the podcast. And you'll have some helpful advice on the Golf Board. Can you do that?
I sure can.
Well, last week's episode with our tour gambling gurus was so fun. And I found it fascinating. I hope you did too. Did you follow any of their advice and possibly win? They did pick Spieth to win. And you know, you think, oh, that's an easy bet. No, it's golf. So it's not always easy, but they did pick him to win. And they also both felt that Brent Snedeker would finish near the top. And he did finish eighth. They were neutral about Ricky Fowler, who imploded, but they also had real concerns about Dustin Johnson.
My buddy has a theory that he hasn't actually liked golf. And I think that might be true. You know, I watched him at Harding and I don't know. I just think that he's like, you know, I think he's got some demons or he's somehow a conflicted guy. I don't know. I mean, he's one of the most talented players in the world and he's so long. So, you know, maybe he'll make me eat my words, but I don't know. I don't, he's definitely not my top choice this weekend.
Yeah, me either. It's just too volatile of a situation. Who else were we talking about that was like that a minute ago when I said feast or famine? Jason Day, maybe?
Yeah,
Jason Day. Jason Day and Dustin Johnson are very similar this weekend, I think.
Not now, not this is even remotely close, but last week my only three putt of the day was on 18. But can you even imagine what was going through his head before his first putt on 18? That was so painful. I feel terribly for the guy, but he's done it before. He will win majors, right? You got to believe that. Anyway, as always, the majors present great stories, drama, and intrigue, and hopefully we can get our gambling gurus back the week of each of the next two majors for this season to give us all advice on what we should be doing if we're gambling. Now, we still have some of Fred Shoemaker's DVD, Extraordinary Golf, The Secret to Transforming Your Game, available if you want one for free. Just submit an honest review for both the Golf Smarter podcast and the free Golf Smarter app in the U.S. iTunes store. Then email me the username that's associated with both reviews and a copy of your comments to confirm what you wrote. And once we read it online, I'll send you the DVD. My email address is fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com. And remember, supplies are limited, so act quickly. Okay, Jeff, thanks so much for sticking around. Can you please give us a little piece of advice when we're interested in riding a golf board or getting a golf board and what we should know?
Yes, I think there's two things that I try to stress to every new user when they first step on the board. One is to use your big muscles and not your small muscles to turn the board, which is to say, shift your weight. Learn to do basic weight shifting a little bit back and forth. If you do that intuitively, the board just turns itself, as opposed to wrestling and trying to horse around, if you will, or use the stability bar to turn. Use your body weight. It's much easier and it's much less stressful on the body. That's number one. And number two is whether you're using a remote control model or a thumb throttle model, doing what I call feathering the accelerator, as opposed to smashing it down and, you know, doing all on or dropping and making it all come off. You'll find it's a much smoother ride if you kind of tickle the accelerator, get the board going to a speed that you're comfortable, and just hold that speed. It makes much nicer experiences for the end user when you're not surging back and forth because you're accelerating, decelerating. That can be a lot more difficult to get comfortable and to learn to ride that way than it is just to kind of tease your way along.